Chapters 24 through 27 of the Compendium represent a transition point in St. Thomas's meditation. Up to this point, we have spoken of God in transcendental terms. That is, we have used words that apply across all the categories of being. Words like being, one, simple or composite, act or potency. As we have spoken of God in these terms, we never feel that we're violating our conclusion that God himself is not bound by any genus or species, that he defies definition. But in the next section, St. Thomas is going to begin using words that are more limited in their range. Words like intellect, thought, will, love. Words that you can't just drop willy-nilly into any category of being. And so he pauses before going on to consider the whole project of naming God. In a way, of course, we have been naming God, but we're about to feel the problem of naming God in a more urgent way. And the problem, put briefly, is this. Because God is infinite in essence, and our every conception of him is finite, every word we apply to God, even if it somehow does apply to him, represents something in our minds which is infinitely distant from him. In other words, God is more unlike than like anything we think. So if we're going to speak about God, the meanings of our words are going to change as we try to apply them to God. If we try to say, for example, that God has intellect, that word can't simply remain the way it was when we were using it 10 minutes ago. Every name that we try to throw up into the heavens and see if it will stick onto God must die as it exits. Every name perishes on the way up. But does this death of our words mean that we simply can't talk about God? Does it mean that we can't recite the creed? Does it mean that that the Bible is no good? Does it mean that we should stop doing theology and go home? No, it doesn't. And St. Thomas brings in a distinction between analogy and sheer equivocation to help us out on this score. Now, we talked about this before in class, but by way of review, simple equivocation is where the same vocal sound has been attached for no good reason to two different objects, like bat the flying mammal and bat the sporting instrument. In that case, you simply can't use your reasoning about flying mammals to conclude anything about sporting instruments. The connection between the two is just incidental. It so happens that this vocal sound attached to the two. But there are times where we attach the same vocal sound to different things for good reason. We can say that a man is healthy, he's in good health. We can say that a salad is healthy. Now, that doesn't mean that the salad is in good health with all its organs functioning properly. It means something else than it does when we speak about the man. But there's a definite reason for using the word again here, namely that the salad causes health in the man. And because there is a definite reason for using the word again, we don't have simple equivocation, we have what St. Thomas is going to call analogy, which is equivocation with reason to it, with rhyme and reason, equivocation with a rationale, right? And when there's a rationale, there's an order. For example, we can see that the word health applies first and foremost to the man and only secondarily to the salad. These two uses of the word health are not equal. There's an order there. In the case of God, we're going to appeal to the fact that all perfections in creatures are somehow pre-contained in him. That's going to ground our claim that it's reasonable to transfer a word from creatures to God. It's reasonable, for example, to say that the intellect that mirrors God in his rational creatures gives us a word we can apply to God and say God is or has intellect. We can then use our reasoning about intellect, if we're careful, actually to say things about God. But here we have to be careful. Not just any word can be tossed up into the heavens and stick to God. Some words, as they achieve exit velocity, not only die, but explode. So, for example, we are not going to end up saying that God is, literally, a rock, even though a rock is one of God's creatures and beloved by him, I'm sure. So what's the difference between a word like intellect and a word like rock? Why can we say one of God successfully and the other only in some lesser way? Well, here we have to make a distinction within analogy. Sometimes the analogy is based on the very essence of the thing we're talking about. So for example, when we say that salad is healthy and we mean that it causes health, we mean that it causes the very same kind of health that you find in the man that we are saying is healthy. Or to take another analogy, if I say that a computer plays chess, and I know I don't mean that the computer engages in exactly the same activity that a human would be engaged in if I said play chess, nonetheless, the very heart of the game chess is behind the transfer of the name. In fact, so much is chess itself behind the transfer of the name that a human can play with the computer. So that the activity can be, even though it's not the same between them, can somehow be shared between them. In other cases, however, the reason for transferring a name is not based on the genus or species or essence of the thing I'm talking about. It's based on a surface feature or a side point. So for example, if I say Achilles is a lion, I don't mean to range Achilles under the species lion, which would be to deny his species as a man. Rather, I mean to transfer to Achilles, to call our attention to Achilles' possession of various features that resemble a lion. His ferocity, perhaps, his dangerousness, perhaps his hairiness, his loudness when he yells. There could be a lot of things going on, but all these will be things that are not the essence of the lion, but features of the lion. And when we speak, when that's the basis for transferring the word from one thing to another, we're dealing with metaphor, right? So we could have a little division like this. When we use words, we use them either univocally or equivocally. If we're using them equivocally, that's either with a reason or without a reason. Without a reason is mere equivocation, sheer equivocation. With a reason, we're calling analogy. Under analogy, you could say the reason for transferring the name is either the very essence of the thing named or a feature of the thing named. If it's a feature of the thing named, we're going to call that metaphor. And if it's the very essence of the thing named, well, then we're going to call that analogy in a kind of stricter sense. So in St. Thomas's treatment, he uses the word analogy to name equivocation for a reason where the reason for the transfer of the name is the very essence of the thing named. Okay, so what does that do for telling us which words can transfer to God and which words can't? Well, we're going to find that although every created essence has a kind of perfection to it, right, as constituted by God, some of these are pure perfections, and some of these are what you might call mixed perfections. So if I say the word rock, the very genus of rock is body, and I find I can't apply the notion of body to God. It just can't get up there. It explodes on the way up due to God's absolute simplicity. It conflicts with God's own nature. So even though there is a perfection to being a rock, the way it is mixed inevitably in its very essence with composition and materiality means that the word rock cannot be transferred to God in virtue of its essence. If we use that word, it's going to end up being a metaphor where we say God is a rock and we mean something like he's unchanging, he's stable, right? Where you take a feature of the rock and then that, you know, unchanging, of course, can transfer to God. Whereas if I take a different word, let's just choose the one we're going to use here in a moment, like intelligent, then I don't right away see something in the notion of intelligence that's incompatible with God's nature. As I explore it, I begin to see that, well, there are imperfections in the way, perhaps, that human beings are intelligent, right? So I may find that human beings have a dumb, slow, stupid way of being rational or intelligent. But intelligence itself doesn't seem to be necessarily bound up with those imperfections. So I can take this word that I got from creatures, and I can go through and deny the imperfections that I would find in the creatures, and still be left with a perfection to attribute to God, right? If I try to deny the imperfections in the name rock, I have to deny the rock itself. But if I try to deny the imperfections that I find in our notion of intelligence, I find I'm not denying the intelligence itself. And so that word, even though in a way it has to die on its way up into heaven, doesn't explode. It becomes a word we can successfully say analogically of God. Now what comes out of this is that we have a threefold approach to naming God. Three ways we do it. First, easiest, is by way of negation. We deny imperfections of God. And that is the safest thing to do, right? Because, for example, when I say that, God is pure act, or, you know, God is all good, I'm not sure what I'm saying. The words have to change as I apply them to God. But if I say something like, God is not a lizard, then I know exactly what I'm saying. I know what a lizard is, and I'm excluding that from God. So I'm not at all unconfident. And I can exclude anything from God and retain that kind of confidence because the thing I'm negating retains the same meaning that it had in my normal parlance. So negation is easy. So we say God is not composite, right? I know exactly what I'm saying. I may not know what that implies for God. I may not be able to turn it into a positive concept, but I can speak by way of negation very securely. The second way after negation is by way of affirmation. That's the whole project that we're talking about here. I take a word that I think is a candidate for application to God, and then I go through and clean it up by, in a targeted way, negating the various perfections in my usual conception of the thing to find out if this is going to survive the process. And if it does, I can affirm the word of God. Right? I can say, yes, God is intelligent. Right? So do you see how, in order to do affirmation, I have to make negations along the way? The via affirmativa uses the via negativa to get its job done. You have to clean up every word. And then when you're done cleaning up the word, so you have an affirmation you're ready to make of God, God is intelligent. Our third way of naming God is by way of immanence. That is, everything we're going to affirm of God, we're going to say he is that, but more so than we can think. So when I'm done cleaning up my concept of intelligence, so I have a kind of purified one that's not inevitably bound up with anything of potentiality, of materiality, and so on, then I not only say God is intelligent, but I include in there the thought he's intelligent, and his intelligence far, far exceeds my grasp of it. So I'm not going to cap his intelligence at the content of my word that I'm applying to him. So my words have to be kind of open-ended, right? It's like I have a box full of meaning, but I never put the lid on the box as I carry it to God. I'm secure that I can carry this box full of the word intelligence over and towards God, but I'm not going to put the lid on it because I know that his intelligence exceeds whatever box I may have in my head. Negation, affirmation, immanence. The three ways we can talk about God.